everybody, and welcome back to a totally prepared for and ready damage report. I'm John Iadarola, very excited for the return, not only of Big News Wednesdays. I look forward to it. I start getting really antsy for it around every Tuesday, but also the return of JR Jackson. How's it going, JR?
What's going on? I'm having issues. I don't see everyone, and I don't like
you. Not see me?
No.
Oh.
But so I hear you.
Do you see the preview of the video?
Not at all. I'm not sure what I'm doing.
Okay, well, we're gonna see what we can do about that. And when I say we, I mean everyone else on the call other than me, because I can't do anything about it. But we'll see how that goes. And I can see you, JR. You look great. Thank you. Glad to have you here.
This just happened. I don't know what happened. I feel like I did something wrong, man.
Interesting. I don't know if you clicked something off, but maybe you dragged us up into that top bar. Skype's fun, isn't it? JR was off the last week. You were communing with nature, I believe.
Yeah. I was up in Big Bear. For folks who aren't in Southern California, Big Bear, it's the mountainous region where you may get some snow, a little bit of fake snow for snowboarding and stuff like that and skiing. But it's a fun little getaway. It's a nice little resort area. And I have something to report.
What's that?
I'm old. my son and I went bowling, just bowling, isolated, separate bowling. And on the first game, normal extension for a bowl. Something pops in my hip. I'm like, oh, that's fine, whatever. Yeah, I've had pops in hips before. And then the whole rest of the day, like limping, just like kept adding to my normal gait. Next, you know, I can't walk at all. I don't know what I did, but I popped something in my hip. And I'm old. The last time that happened, I was 16 years old and I was in high school and I was playing football. So put it that way, someone snatched my leg in high school.
Maybe it's not just age.
When I was, no, but this, I was playing football.
Oh.
And I was running and someone snatched my leg and it popped. And I was like, that's the last time this happened. This time it happened because no one was touching me and I was making a normal general movement with my body.
Oh God, oh God.
Aging is a beautiful thing.
You know, it's funny because this morning I remembered there was a period, and this is for people who've been watching throughout the pandemic. There was a period where Wednesdays were fun in the pandemic because JR would come on and tell me about how much working out he's doing, how much weight he's losing, and I feel like crap. So. Yeah, how's your hip doing, JR?
It was doing a little bit better, and I went to my kid's baseball scrimmage yesterday and decided to act like a normal coach is running around, and I was running all over the place and kind of hopping and stuff. And I was like, I can't stop moving. That's my first problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's still happening, John. I'm still losing weight. I'm still feeling pretty good.
Great. Well, that's wonderful. I'm very happy for you, buddy. I will say the thing that has convinced me most that I'm in trouble is not just that I get a little bit out of breath running up the stairs or whatever. That's upstairs. That's at least known to be difficult. When my dog wants to play and like he'll get a toy and he'll run around and I have to chase him and everything, mm-hmm. 20 seconds and I'm tired. It is very tiring chasing a dog down low and everything.
Yeah.
Oh God.
No, I have a remedy for that. I promise we'll get started. My remedy for that is don't play with your dog. I don't know.
Feels so bad. My heart aches for Sprocket and his plight. Anyway, we've got a lot of news that we're going to be rolling through. But in addition to that, you know who we like talking to? You. Yes, you. You can send us tweets and super chats and all of that, and we'll respond as we go. I can see a bunch already rolling in. We'll be getting to those in the breaks between stories. But we've got a lot we're going to be talking about, breaking down not only the latest on Matt Gaetz, totally innocent guy. What's going to be going on with him politically in the near future? We've got Joe Manchin and Tom Cotton duking it out for worst person in politics this week, maybe. And then January 6th, was it bad? Maybe not, according to Tucker Carlson. We're going to talk about that as well. We've got a lot that we're going to be talking about. So definitely stay tuned. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. You can share the stream. And with that, why don't we launch into this thing, JR?
Down.
As has been noted, Matt Gaetz, very loyal to Donald Trump. 4 years, that's pretty much why you know who he is, actually, is that he would always pop up on Fox News to defend Donald Trump. You know who noticed that? Donald Trump. That's why he became an ally of him, watching him on Fox News and seeing how he's a fighter for the president and all that. There was no scandal that would cause Matt Gaetz to exercise one bit of critical thought about Donald Trump. And in the end, Gaetz apparently wanted something for all of that. We're now finding out, thanks to the New York Times. In the final weeks of Mr. Trump's term, Mr. Gaetz sought something. He privately asked the White House for blanket preemptive pardons for himself and unidentified congressional allies for any crimes they may have committed. according to two people told the discussions. I am assuming the unidentified congressional allies are unidentified to the New York Times, not to Trump. I don't think you can just be like, give me literally a blank check, not only for the crimes, but also for who's being pardoned. But that's what he asked for. Now understand, around that time, Gates was also publicly calling for broad pardons from Trump to thwart what he called the bloodlust of their political opponents. But Justice Department investigators had begun questioning Mr. Gates' associates about his conduct, including whether he had a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old that violated sex trafficking laws. He said on Hannity back in December of last year, President Trump should pardon Michael Flynn. He should pardon the Thanksgiving turkey. He should pardon me. He should pardon anyone from himself to his administration officials to Joe Exotic if he has to. You see from the radical left a bloodlust that will only be quenched if they come after the people who worked so hard to animate the Trump administration with the policies like which the vigor and effectiveness that delivered for the American people. So he was out there saying, everybody should be pardoned. Everybody should be pardoned because of the left. As the investigation begins in the right bar-led DOJ into his potential crime. So pretty convenient for him as a smokescreen for himself under the guise of defending Trump. Even to that point, this was presented as a thing that was intended to protect Trump. Trump is under assault. Trump's allies have been under assault. They should all be protected. And by the way, I should too. Now, this is what we know. There's some stuff that we don't know about this yet. It's unclear whether Mr. Gates or the White House knew at the time about the inquiry or who else he sought pardons for. Mr. Gates did not tell White House aides that he was under investigation for potential sex trafficking violations when he made the request. But top White House lawyers and officials viewed the request for a preemptive pardon as a non-starter that would set a bad precedent. So we don't know if he knew or the White House knew, but it is entirely possible, certainly, that the president might know about it, since Barr himself, another extremely close Trump ally, was fully aware of this investigation as it began, again, under the Republicans, not under the left. And we do know that aides told Mr. Trump of the request, though it's unclear whether Mr. Gates discussed the matter directly with the president. But bear in mind, Gates talks all the time about how many phone calls he would have with Donald Trump. So it's possible it came up. But what didn't come up is the actual pardon. Because once again, after all of this, after talking with Trump, and Trump knew about it, Trump did not pardon him. He pardoned a number of people, a number of allies who were loyal to him, but not Matt Gates. Take that.
Well, anyway, it seemed Jared, to have been a different kind of request for a pardon. You know, we had people that were trying to pick off some pardons at the end of Trump's administration because they knew that, you know, there's time to cash in on some of these political favors. Also, that Trump is too dim to realize, you know, the way that they're trying to use him. Maybe for the past several years or however many years that they've known him, that they've set up this opportunity to be like, oh man, Trump likes to throw out pardons. He doesn't really care because he's a barn burner. So whatever, we'll see if we can kind of use money and influence in a way to get him to go our direction. That all makes sense. This one was a little bit different because Gates was on the whole, for everything I've ever done in my life from age 5 to 36 or 37, however old this guy is, you need to absolve it all. And whatever I may do afterwards, go ahead and pardon me for that too. The specificity of this kind of blanket pardon for anything that he has done, will do, seems to be a little bit more broad. And maybe that's what kind of threw them off. Maybe that's what kind of freaked them out from having anything to do with this particular pardon. Maybe. Because what do we pardon him for? Because the other things were specific. They were abhorrent, some of those things that Trump pardoned these people for. But they were specific. He didn't care if it was so bad and it looked horrible. He was just doing it. Maybe it was a bridge too far to be like, Matt Gates, for anything he's ever done in his life and will do, I pardon him. Because that seems a little bit like, we're looking for something, you know.
Yeah, because not only do we not know if in particular cases whether it would even hold up, like the constitutionality of an incredibly blanket pardons is one of many things in the US Constitution that hasn't really been tested sufficiently. But also, like, they know that Matt Gaetz is a shady MF-er. They know that. So when you say he's pardoned for everything, there would reasonably be an expectation that you had looked into stuff. Because if it turned out that he murdered someone, then you ahead of time are saying, it's cool. Dude's real. Hey, we love him. He's great. Great to get a brew with. We pardon him for everything. So apparently they didn't want to sign on to that because like Matt Gaetz is popular on the right. But like in kind of a general sense, very few individuals seem to care at all about this guy.
You haven't seen the level of full throated defense from Republicans that you've seen on other things. You know, you have many sexual assault or even not necessarily trafficking accusations on folks, but sexual assault, sexual harassment, all those types of things. And they come out in full throated defense of these folks because they're like, well, hold on, JR.
I want to turn to that. So I'm going to give you I'm going to give you a minute to launch into that. But let me set it up, actually.
Yeah.
So last night we learned from the New York Times that Matt Gaetz had been shopping around to try to get a blanket pardon from Donald Trump, which is, again, let's note what an entirely innocent person does. I haven't committed any crime, so I'm constantly looking for get out of jail free cards. But anyway, after that report comes out, we do have responses, and it's our duty as journalists to give you the response, and then as commentators to evaluate whether they're BS or not. So first from Gaetz, we have a statement from the spokesman saying, entry level political operatives have conflated a pardon call from Representative Gaetz, where he called for President Trump to pardon everyone from himself to his administration to Joe Exotic with these false and increasingly bizarre partisan allegations against him. They're saying that entry level political operatives have conflated that. It looks like you are conflating that, Gaetz spokesman, because that's something that we're talking about as context. That's something that the New York Times mentioned, but that's not the thing they're reporting on. Yeah. But there's that, JR, and there's also Trump, who has now, he tweeted about it. It's not a tweet, it's on letterhead, but it's a tweet. And he said this: Congressman Matt Gaetz has never asked me for a pardon. It must also be remembered that he has totally denied the accusations against. So I've got thoughts on that, JR, but what do you think about the level of defense that he's been getting, including now there's actually a statement from Trump, which is something.
Yeah, there's a statement from Trump, which is something. I think he kept the characters low enough to fit on Twitter because that's what he's used to communicating by. But it's the defense from Matt Gaetz. First,
nothing.
It was looking like they were going to just leave him out, hang him out to dry. And what I've seen a couple of reports now is that, you know, some of Trump's aides had to jump in and be like, listen, because Trump wanted to jump straight into it and defend him because, hey, that's my boy. I do that type of stuff. I would want someone to defend me. He's defending me through all this whole time. And just yesterday, I was speculating that he was abandoning him the way he's abandoned other loyalists. You're loyal to him, but he's not loyal back to you. But apparently he was gonna prove me wrong because Donald Trump wanted to come out immediately in full throated defense of Matt Gaetz, but his aide said, listen, Donald, this is a different kind of crime. This isn't just your run of the mill sexual assault. This is potentially child trafficking and having sex with an underage minor and all this stuff. You don't want to touch that because then it might come back to you. So he wanted to, and then he was whittled down to this by advisors. But if he was on Twitter, it would have been fired off immediately. So I think for the first time, his handlers are happy about his Twitter ban because this would have been on Twitter immediately. I mean,
So you think if it was up to Trump, he would have been more defensive of Matt Gaetz?
Absolutely. I mean, there was a report
saying seriousness of the crimes.
There was a report that he wanted to. He wanted to come out in full defense of him, and as the aides told him to back it down a little bit, and this is the tampered down version of what Donald Trump wanted to say. And which, by the way, is emblematic of what he likes to do. What was it? MBS. Rob Portman, remember his aide? It was a White House staffer who was abusing his girlfriend, Rob Porter. Did I say something? Yeah, Rob Porter. As I said, MBS. Vladimir Putin, he's always talking about how these folks, they came out. By the way, I want to point out, it was a very strong no from them. They said no, they really didn't do it. So therefore, I believe them. Yeah, so as we remember, US intelligence said one thing about Putin. Putin said he strongly didn't do it. Which one did Donald Trump believe? The guy who said, I strongly didn't do it. Not the intelligence of the country that you're the head of. So that's his normal run of the mill lines of defenses. Well, they said they didn't do it and he's my buddy, so he didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, look, I wanna delve into this because of course, you know, Trump is basically a modern day Oscar Wilde. Like there's so much in everything that he writes. So there's less than one full tweet here. First sentence, Congressman Matt Gaetz has never asked me for a pardon. Okay, so first of all, could be true. Let's bear that in mind. Matt Gaetz might not have done anything. That is entirely possible. And I don't think that it's accurate. But Matt Gaetz has never asked me for a pardon. So Trump could also be lying because let's bear in mind, He's a massive liar. But let's assume that he's not lying on an official statement with presidential letterhead in a very verifiable way. Let's give him more credit than he's ever earned in his entire life. Mm-hmm. We don't know that Matt Gaetz actually specifically talked to Trump himself and asked for it, which makes this the easiest evasion possible. If Matt Gaetz's aide talked to some, I almost swore, some person in the White House, then that would make this not a lie, even though clearly Matt Gaetz is trying to get it. So I don't have a lot of faith in that first sentence. Second sentence, it must also be remembered that he has totally denied the accusations against him. So Trump writing that is a defense of Gaetz. And so Gaetz might feel a little bit better for that, even though, remember, Matt Gaetz, he abandoned you for a full week right now, and he didn't give you the pardon that you worked so hard for. But also, when Trump wants to defend someone, as JR is pointing out, he can come way harder than that. It's a witch hunt, it's made up, deep state, it's the damn libs, the commie Chinese are doing it. This is just, let's also bear in mind, he said, I didn't do it. That's not that strong.
It's not that good. And also, by the way, it was widely known. By the way, it was Maggie Haberman on MSNBC or CNN this morning that said that he was talked out of having a more full-throated defense. So that was where I was getting that from.
Sure.
Which, you know, it was a report on that. And as you know, the New York Times report was the first one that came out. So I'm sorry, wait a second. No, there was a point about what you just said, and it threw me because I wanted to make sure it was
about
Maggie
Haberman. I went through that Gaetz didn't specifically ask for it, and also that he denied the accusations, and that's it, rather than something stronger.
Yeah, so it was a total different thought, but either way it goes. But if you think about it, also, you're also denying the fact you even would have asked for a pardon, which that makes it sound bad, right? That you would ask for a pardon for something that you haven't done yet, or maybe you're admitting guilt. So that would automatically throw some salt on the people, or some shade on the people that did get pardons. So people went and requested and asked for pardons. It must be a negative thing, right? Because you said you didn't do it, because that's a horrible thing to do. Why isn't it a disparaging thing about everyone else that asked for a pardon from Trump and got one? It's the ones who did and the ones that didn't. These were all reported in the last few months of his administration, was that people are looking for pardons, and then it wasn't seen as a horrible thing to ask for. Look, Roger Stone was forefront talking about how much he's getting pardons from Trump. So it's now it's suddenly a bad thing when it's based off of some real accusations that are actually coming down on you. But before that, when other folks have had their accusations and are asked for pardons, it's not a bad thing at all. So why is it such a bad thing now?
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Just looks so shady. I guess who wouldn't want a blanket pardon? But
that's what it was. John,
things he's done.
He was known in there was aides again. More reporting. There was aides that were saying of other of folks around him that were sending like accounts of things that Matt Gaetz would do.
Sure. Yeah. Embarrassing videos.
Yeah. To other Republicans that were, you know, maybe other Republican, you know, staff members that were working. They're like, oh, everyone knew about Matt Gaetz is the point.
Yeah.
Everyone knew about Matt Gaetz. Not that they knew this extent of this type of stuff, but they knew that he liked to do things that were a bit nefarious and a bit out of bounds. We talked about things with the things he showed on his cell phone. People knew about Matt Gaetz. So I think they already, that's where the problem with defending him is coming from. They probably saw this coming down the pike for the past couple of years, honestly.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, it finally hit. I'm glad it didn't hit when Trump was in office, because then we'd have to talk about it a lot more.
That's the sentiment that I've read, that they were just sort of waiting. This is an unserious person. He's inevitably going to get in trouble. Now, let's turn really fast.
I'm sorry, he was a grenade with a pin has already been
already pulled out. Yeah. Not a good image. Okay, so really fast to jump into this, just because I thought it was weird. Matt Gaetz has mostly just like faded into the shadows over the past week. He wrote his little op-ed for the Washington Examiner. That's pretty much been it. He hasn't really been on Fox, but he is going to be somewhere soon. I believe actually this Friday, we find out from the Women for America First that he is going to be speaking at the Save America Summit at Trump National Doral in Miami, Florida, coming up this Friday. They say Representative Matt Gaetz has been a fearless leader in DC. Few members of Congress have been more willing than Matt to stand up and fight on behalf of President Trump and his America First agenda. But notice that Women for America First they are not even trying to claim that he's been standing up to fight for women or anything like that. Because they know what they're doing, all of the aspects about it. We'll probably joke anyway, but they know how bad that looks and how, oh God, Trump really wants us to do this. And like, oh God, we gotta defend him, I guess. But he is gonna be there. And he is going to be at a Trump place giving a speech, presumably, JR. So again, maybe this combined with the presidential tweet statement, this might be the beginning of Trump sort of formally defending this guy who, for all we know, in a month, we're going to find out that he was trafficking children.
This was the rehab tour. And again, so now I'm just curious about what he's going to talk about. Is he going to talk about how he's been working for women's rights all these years? Or is he going to bring up the stuff that's going on now? In maybe even a subtle way. I feel like he has to, because this is this type of guy. Like, he's a Trump type of guy. So he feels like he has to come out and fully defend it. The way he went on Tucker Carlson's show and decided to insinuate how Tucker does the same things he does. And then Tucker was very uncomfortable with that. He's the type of guy who wants to get in front of the camera, in front of a crowd, probably even more so in front of a crowd, because they're gonna be compelled to support him, or else they look bad for being there. And he's gonna maybe insinuate how the news media and the FBI and the liberal left are coming after me. He may mention it without mentioning it. But I don't see how this is a good look and how it's suddenly going to absolve him of any of these, or even in the court of public opinion, how it's going to free him of this type of stuff. It may make him look worse.
It might. I mean, I think the idea is, and I talked about this on the show yesterday, like there have been very few Republicans that have defended him. Basically, Jim Jordan, Marjorie Greene, which is, that's just terrible. Trump hasn't, but like Trump having him at his club maybe sends a signal to other Republicans that they can defend him. And in particular, not just defend him like with a statement, that's useful, I guess. But they've been talking behind the scenes now of, if he gets indicted, he's gone. We're gonna like make him resign. Maybe they're trying to get out in front of that. Like maybe Trump does actually care about him. It's almost beautiful in a really sick, disturbing child predator sort of way. But
does this do anything to Trump? Say Trump gets on board. Trump is not connected because he's at his resort, or then there's these groups that are associated with Trump that are supporting him. What more bad can be done with Trump's name right now? Not much.
Yeah.
It's a risk worth taking for both of them.
And again, we don't know if he did anything. It's entirely possible that all of this is made up. You know, and from Women for America First, that's enough for them to look past him voting against a trafficking law and him voting against a revenge porn thing and him showing maybe non-consensual naked photos on the floor and basically treating women as if they're stroopwafel, basically. He enjoys them, they're disposable, he can pass them out to his friends if he wants. That's effectively what it is.
Yeah,
that's fun.
It is a small aside, but I was looking at the little promo for Matt Gaetz going to this Women for Trump event. And it happens. It's not like it's a Republican thing, so don't get me wrong. I just, Can we stop with any, if it's a women's event, it has to be pink borders and then pink letters and then pink hats and then pink shirts. Hey, you know what? Women like blue. Women like red. Women like purple. In fact, men like purple. Men like pink. Men like turquoise. It's so weird. Can we get beyond this? It's such an archaic thing. I'm so tired of it.
I get it. There's a lot of great colors.
But it's a
let's use them. Joe Biden's got his infrastructure bill, and now we've got a potential fight brewing over the only $2 and change trillion infrastructure bill. Even that might be too much for some people, and some people is always Joe Manchin. Not only, like, bear in mind, he said they should ask for more before, but now that the $2.2 trillion one is out, he apparently has an issue with how they're going to pay for it. He warned earlier this week that the Biden administration's massive infrastructure package can't pass in its current form because he and a handful of other Senate Democrats, even more cowardly than he, since they're not identifying themselves, believe the corporate tax hikes proposed in the bill designed to offset its costs are too steep. And he said, if I don't vote to get on it, it's not going anywhere. So we're going to have some leverage here. And it's more than just me. There are 6 or 7 other Democrats who feel very strongly about this. We have to be competitive, and we're not going to throw caution to the wind. He says he's against raising the current 21% corporate tax rate, which was put in place by the 2017 tax overhaul under the Trump administration, to 28% as called for in the bill, and instead supports a middle ground 25% rate, which he called fair, notably without defining what fair is supposed to mean. When most of these corporations have been paying effectively no taxes for so long, when their taxes up until just a few years ago were at least on paper significantly higher than 21 or 25 or even 28%, they would still be better off than they were just pre-Trump. And even raising it halfway back from what Trump cut it, that's unfair, JR.
That's unfair. Now think about this. So I listened to a lot of that interview he had with the West Virginia radio or source. I'm sorry if I'm blanking on who they were, but he goes through a bunch of different peaks and valleys for this argument. So one point he did point out that Trump's tax cut in 2017 screwed over many Americans, and we have to recoup that back. And look what they've done with corporations. And it was a pulling the wool over people's eyes. Like, they thought this was something for the middle class, but actually turned to something big for the richest. He said all that stuff and said that should have never been that way in the first place. But his remedy is not to fully go back and actually tax the folks that got these huge deals. So why bring up the fact that we had those issues with the tax plan, but you don't want to do enough to remedy it? What does that say about your position? Yeah. It says you don't really believe in that position, that we shouldn't have ever gone that way in the first place. Because if you don't want to go fully back against what we did and remedy the problem, you're halfway okay with it, aren't you?
So you know? Since you watched more of the interview, I actually have a question for you. So did he actually address that if he's saying he's theoretically okay with the $2.2 trillion, and in the past, like 2 weeks ago, was saying it should be higher, $3 or $4 trillion, and he doesn't want the corporate tax to go up. What is his answer? Is it higher taxes on individuals? Is it cutting the bill? Is it not paying for it? What is his suggestion?
He didn't have to because he wasn't asked that.
Why should he?
So then what do we do about this? If you support the bill, then where does it come from? Because if you have to answer that question, it'll look bad for you. Because if it's not coming from the folks who haven't been paying taxes and have been benefiting the most from not paying taxes, because, you know, we'll talk about people who effectively pay 0% in taxes when they make $15,000 in a year. I don't care. They made $15,000 in a year. Why are we concerned about whether or not they paid 0 in taxes? Because in reality, they actually paid in taxes, because we pay taxes every day on everything. Yeah. So if you're worried about people that make 15K a year not paying taxes, but you're not concerned about the corporation that made hundreds of billions of dollars and not paying taxes, I'm not sure who you've been convinced by is the real problem in America. Because if you collect the tax from the 15,000 person, it's not changing much. It's not funding anything that we need. It's not helping the country. But you're okay with us allowing corporations to avoid paying taxes. And that's your solution to it. Because again, if Manchin had to answer the question, it would be like, oh, of course, it's gonna fall down on everyone else. We gotta raise taxes on things like gas. We gotta, you know, all those taxes that people do on an everyday basis, which of course goes and gets those 15,000 earners, or even the 40,000, 50,000 earners, which still isn't enough. So if we're worried about them, or we're not worried about them, but we're worried about the corporations that have avoided this situation, I mean, we have to start all over with where we think our priorities lie, with how these things work.
Sure. Yeah, and he's a senator for West Virginia. Like, his constituents are like, I won't stand for the corporate tax rate going to 28%. It doesn't make any sense. All the Republicans who are gonna like fight to keep corporate taxes as low as possible, pretending that they're populist. What is that word supposed to mean, honestly? Why is it never reflected in any policy? It's weird. We keep using it as if it exists, but I've never seen it in DC. Anyway, let's play a brief game. The game we occasionally play called Dumb or Stupid, or Dumb or Lying, I guess we'll say Dumb or Lying. When he says this, we have to have our Republican friends work with us too. They just can't be against everything, thinking this is going to be political posturing we're going to take for the 2022 elections. Well, like, okay, that's, look, if you don't actually believe that and you're just saying that, but then you're going to actually support the bill, okay, it's good as cover, I guess. But they definitely are going to use that as their stance going into 2022, or a hybrid of it where they do vote against everything, but then pretend in ads that they voted in support of this stuff. No, they're not. They don't want to work with you, and they're not your friends. Or if they are your friends, Joe Manchin, they're certainly not our friends. I hate that he has so much power.
So he's got friends in the Republican Party that he needs to work with us, and they can't completely continue to oppose us like they have. He could have made that same statement in 2010. So. It's the same statement. So then therefore, I'm sorry, 2008. So then in 2010, you know, when the midterms come, we have to make sure that we can't make it seem like we're just posturing for the midterms. Every cycle is the same thing over and over and over again. The Republicans can't possibly be this anti-American, can they? No, but the Republicans can't be this anti-American, can they? But after this, they can't be this. Yes, they can, and they continue to be. And you continue to somehow be shocked by how they are, but they can't possibly be every time. Number two, he pointed out his leverage, because he then, after pointing out his leverage against Democrats, his party, pointing out his leverage against Democrats to change things. But if you have leverage against the Democrats, but you need your friends in the Republican Party to help you out, where's the leverage to get them to move over? Your leverage is you're leaning on Democrats, but you're not leaning on Republicans. You're hoping to please Republicans long enough with your leaning on Democrats and show them your leverage and hoping they'll go your way. That doesn't make any sense. How does that work? Let me lean on the folks that I'm supposed to be working with and do nothing for the folks who are openly opposing everything that will help Americans. How does that get anything done? And you notice after he points out his leverage, because you know how bad that sounds, he's like, oh, and there's seven or eight other of us that are also, they agree with me. They're all on the same boat. Are they? Or is it just you pushing your leverage and pointing out how you want to be this most powerful person in the country, which he's also denied when someone asked him? Do you enjoy being the kingmaker in America? No. I'm just a small town guy from West Virginia. I'm just Joe. And I go back home and I talk to my constituents and they say, yeah, screw us over, Joe.
Exactly. Well, and let's go to those constituents actually. What do those people think? We're talking about the sort of elite group that's behind closed doors trying to determine who's gonna actually be president. It looks like, I guess it's gonna be Joe Manchin or maybe Chris Sinema. And honestly, at this point, I'd probably choose Joe Manchin there. Anyway, what do the people actually think? Let's launch into that. With the actual like process of passing the infrastructure bill coming up, and you're gonna have so many people trying to manipulate it and potentially kill it. Certainly Republicans, but also apparently a good number of Democrats are gonna pretend that raising the corporate tax rate back up to not even what it was a few years ago is unacceptable. Let's go to what the people actually think about the bill as of right now. A survey by Invest in America and Data for Progress found that voters support Biden's American job plan by a 52-point margin, with 73% of all voters in favor and only 21% opposed. We're gonna give you some more granular data there, but I want you to bear in mind one thing. When you see that 73% support it, 21% oppose it, you might think, oh, 21% don't like the bill. They don't support what the bill is trying to do. They're probably like MAGA heads or something like that that don't want the infrastructure bill. Most of them probably are, but you can oppose a bill for different reasons. There were people who opposed the ACA because they felt like the ACA didn't go far enough. So some of those who oppose this bill might be like us who think it's not big enough, it's not bold enough, it doesn't address enough, it's too pared down. So in all likelihood, a version of support exists for even more than 73%. And by the way, if you break it down amongst different political identifications, you can see that sure, 69% of Democrats and ICE strongly support it. 31% of independents strongly support it. 17% of Republicans strongly support it. So there is widespread support, even amongst Republicans, on this bill. And in terms of strong opposition, there's very little, regardless of who you actually look at. Now, you're not gonna see this reflected in DC. They're gonna pretend that this is the most controversial thing imaginable. There are headlines right now implying that Biden is basically like Castro for trying to pass something like this. But the American people are largely supportive of taxpayer money going into their communities. Shocking, I know.
Yeah, it's weird how that works. But again, this is where you get a chance to be brainwashed or told what you believe by politicians that go on TV. You know, instead of them actually looking at what American people want, paying attention to what American people said they wanted, instead you go on TV and tell everyone, yeah, my constituents want this. Who told you that? No, that's just a ploy. Just go on TV and say, everyone around me says they want this way, which is anti-American. And then the folks who are sitting at home are like, maybe I'm the only one who doesn't like that idea. The whole point is to make people think that everyone around them is believing this and you're the only one who doesn't. But if you look at the polling, if you look at people's opinions and what people have actually said and the way they're living, you'd understand that they don't want that. That's not the way it works. When it comes to healthcare, any of these things, American people want access to things, and then politicians tell them, no, you don't want that. What you've told me is that you want the opposite. And somehow that works enough to convince people that they're the crazy one. You know, you feel like you're isolated sometimes. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, I guess I'm on board with everyone else. You know, we have this mob mentality of no one else agrees with me. I don't want to be that guy that's lone in my thoughts of American values. So I'm going to go ahead and go against it. It sucks, man. I don't know how many of us are going to be convinced of this.
Well, look, and that's why we just got to put out accurate information, hopefully, so that as we go into this battle, people know what's up, like with the COVID aid bill. And one other thing I'll throw out is there's discussion too about what's actually included in it, what should be considered infrastructure. And the way, if you listen to Fox and Friends, it's like literally a road. That is it. Anything else is not infrastructure. You listen to Noam, the governor, she doesn't seem to think that anything is infrastructure. Power is an infrastructure, water is an infrastructure. But anyway, in terms of what the voters think, according to the poll, more than 60% of voters back every key provision of the plan, including investments in physical infrastructure, clean energy, manufacturing, housing, and the care economy. So it is a broad infrastructure bill, that is true. It's not big enough for me, but it is broad. And they support money going into those things. So you're gonna be told that a lot of stuff is controversial, that is not in any way controversial. So just be prepared. It has been 3 months since the insurgency in the Capitol. And what have we learned? Oh, so little apparently, in no small part thanks to the continuing efforts by the right wing to whitewash, sort of literally, what happened that day. Take a look at Tucker Carlson as he looks back on that day and understand, while this monologue is exactly what he said, Media Matters journalist Brendan Carrot decided to add a little bit of a visual component to it to go along with the audio. So take a look at this.
Today is the 3 month anniversary of January 6th. For those of you who aren't good at dates or don't have calendars, this is the day that we pause to remember the white supremacist QAnon insurrection that came so very close to toppling our government and ending this democracy forever. You saw what happened, it was carried live on television, every gruesome moment. A mob of older people from unfashionable zip codes somehow made it all the way to Washington, DC, probably by bus. They wandered freely through the Capitol like it was their building or something. They didn't have guns, but a lot of them had extremely dangerous ideas. They talked about the Constitution and something called their rights. Some of them made openly seditious claims. They insisted, for example, that the last election was not entirely fair. The whole thing was terrifying. And then, as you've been told so very often, they committed unspeakable acts of violence. By the time thousands of soldiers arrived to restore order, an unarmed woman, an Air Force veteran, lay dead. To this day, that woman is the one completely verified casualty of the insurrection, the only person whose death we can say definitively was caused by specific events on January 6th. We know how she died. The funny thing is, you almost never hear that woman's name. Possibly that's because she was not a Democratic member of Congress or even a Joe Biden voter. She was a protester. Her name was Ashley Babbitt. She was 35. We still don't know who shot Ashley Babbitt or why. No one will tell us. But then when you're fighting insurrectionists, you don't have to explain yourself. You just hyperventilate about QAnon and then you do whatever you want. When a group of sad, disenfranchised people who've been left out of the modern economy show up at your office, you don't have to listen to their complaints. Not for a second. Why would you? You thought listening to people's complaints was democracy? No, these people threaten democracy.
Okay, so thank you to Brendan, by the way, for putting those visuals on there, because you'll notice that Tucker did not. And it's not that he can't, he has a full staff and he likes to. Remember, months and months into the BLM protests, he would use footage of fires that he'd put the date on. It would be 3-4 months earlier, he'd be using B-roll of fires. But for there, for some reason, 3 months after the insurrection, he decided to do this sarcastic look back on the event without using any footage whatsoever, perhaps because the footage tells the true story. And so thank you to Brendan and Media Matters for putting that out there. I have thoughts on some of the specific things he said there, JR, but what did you think?
This it could be every sentence has an ironic approach to it. So as if it's the people's house, as if they're not supposed to be there. So if I walk, even before January 6th, as we know that it's been reinforced because of the attack, even before January 6th, if I just walk up to the Capitol and say, I'm coming to talk to Nancy Pelosi, I'm gonna walk in because it's my house. I pay taxes, I pay plenty of taxes. Do I get to walk into Washington, to take a flight to Washington DC, walk up to the Capitol and say, hey, I wanna talk to Nancy Pelosi, I'm tired of her madness. Or maybe I should say it, Mitch McConnell. I came to talk to Mitch McConnell, that turtle, I'm coming to get him. Are they gonna let me in? Are they gonna let me in? No, they're not gonna let me in, but it's still my house though.
You could ride a Harley through the front door. Doesn't matter, it's your house. Context doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter. And again, if after 3 months, now on April 6th, you're gonna talk about how where it's a 3 month anniversary of what happened on January 6th. So if you have someone from MSNBC talk every month and go, it is now May 6th, it's June 6th. Been 4 or 5 months since the Capitol attacks, and we're gonna talk about how horrific they were and how much sedition took place. And look at these insurrectionists. If you go through all that every month, you know what people like Tucker Carlson are gonna say? How dare these people keep focusing on January 6th riots? That was over and done with. We took care of it, and there was a couple of few insurrectionists here and there that were probably Antifa. So they're gonna get annoyed that you're continually harping on the devastating events of January 6th. But if he can bring it up every month to talk about how it was not a big deal, what is the motivation? It always talks, this guy goes back to things that no one asked him about, but he's gonna talk about because his motivation is to continue to whitewash, have a revisionist history of everything, because that's what we've always done in this country. Except we don't get a chance to do things like what happened here, which is show the reality. You know, folks in power have always been telling us what history is in our country, what the present is in our country. But the difference now is we can show them what we just saw. And he had to confront that too. It was shown wall to wall on your televisions about all the horrible, horrible violence. That's the truth.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we saw. But instead, if you put a little sarcastic tone on it, suddenly that doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. That is a manipulation of your audience because you've molded their brains down to this Play-Doh-like substance that you just change every night. Yeah. Like, you guys are so dumb. I'm gonna tell you that January 6th was nothing every month. And eventually you're gonna go to your friends and be like, you know, January 6th wasn't a very big deal at all. You know, we were invited in, it's our house. We wanted to kill people, but that's all right.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, polls confirmed this week, more than 50% of Republicans think that it was either entirely peaceful or it was Antifa that did it. And why do they think that? This, what you just saw. 3 months of Tucker Carlson immediately after the event and up until now lying about what actually happened there and pretending that we just can't find footage. It just doesn't exist. What a coward. What an utter coward Tucker Carlson is that he's gonna try to push this narrative and pretend as if there isn't footage. No, be bold, be strong. Show the footage and then imply that it's fine. No, it's acceptable. Yep. Right wingers get to do that. Here's footage of them trying to beat a cop to death with a flag. Here's why that's okay. Be a man, Tucker Carlson. If you're gonna try to push America into fascism, at least own up to a bit of the process along the way. But he won't. He's a little scared rich wuss using the tools that are available to him. For instance, QAnon. A dude will never have the balls to say on air, QAnon's real, But he'll certainly imply it because he desperately wants people who believe QAnon to watch his show, which is why he made the little sarcastic comment about, oh, they're saying it was Q. Show the footage of the Q flags and then respond with why it's okay. If Q is great, then actually make that case. Stop alluding to stuff, stop implying stuff, and actually say something for once. But he did say some things, and those things were lies. They didn't have guns. Yeah, they did. One guy had a car loaded with guns. They had pipe bombs too. Notice he didn't bring those up. They thought the election was unfair. Oh, Tucker, follow up. Why did they think that? Is it because of you, your network, and your whole political thing? Is it possibly that that's why they think it? Thousands of soldiers showed up. How long did it take for soldiers to show up? How much damage was done as a result of that? Did he have a problem with that? No. No, loves cracking down on protests. Not so much this one. You don't even have to listen to their complaints. First of all, they had complaints, and what you know what we had? An election. They lost it. We had runoffs. They lost those. That's how American political complaints are adjudicated. In elections, which you guys keep losing, okay? No complaints don't come in the form of breaking in windows. They didn't just get invited in. It's not just their house. Show the footage of them scaling the walls and breaking things down. Show, for instance, them chanting the names of people they wanted to hunt down. This entire thing is, I am going to push people to violence. I am going to push them to do what I want them to do. And if they fail, as they did on the 6th, then it doesn't count. If they tried to kill people but failed, it doesn't count. Except for, of course, the cop, which they did kill. But they didn't get to Nancy Pelosi, so it doesn't count. And anyone who implies that it's dangerous or we should take it seriously, no, you're being hysterical. You're hyperventilating about this. He spent an entire year freaking out at any time across America that like three black people in BLM shirts assembled. That was chaos to him. It could not be allowed. But this, the 6th, is totally fine.
It's all they've got because they've built this bias against certain folks. So once you've built that bias against certain folks, you can just say they're the evil ones and therefore we do these evil things, but we're the good guys. That doesn't matter. It's a game. It's if you've convinced your followers enough that there's this one side that no matter what happens, they're the bad guys, and no matter what happens on our side, we're the good guys. You can look at the footage of us doing bad things and you can still say it's a good thing without fully saying so, because you might look a little crazy in saying that. So again, like you mentioned, three BLM folks that may collect for a second, and then you have folks say, hey, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. They could not stop repeating it. They could not stop repeating how that is the most vehemently anti-cop, violent rhetoric of all times. Did they break into police departments and start murdering police officers and walk around menacingly saying, hey, Officer Wilson, did that happen? Did they break into police departments and start murdering cops? And then when one cop shot, maybe in this weird situation, shoots one of the people who dove into a police department, then you go, how dare they shoot one of these people? What was she doing? There was that whole part. She was literally about to climb through a window where there was some senators and congressmen, which were one of the two, 25, 30 feet away. That's who was. And you know who shot her? Who shot her was a Capitol, a Secret Service agent that was to the very last second decided to go ahead and shoot this woman. And now that's, we're not gonna say her name. What happened to her? She was an intruder and a terrorist that day. That's who she was. Fine, say her name. Point out who she was when you say her name. Because when we say everyone else's name, we point out that they were innocent victims of violence.
Sure. And by the way, you know who wishes that she hadn't been shot? Me.
Yep.
I wish she hadn't been shot. But I also am not so stupid and laser focused on the particular moment that she was shot that I can't acknowledge how she got there. You can read about her past and how she was radicalized. She should have never been in the Capitol. She shouldn't have been in DC that day. She went because Trump told her to. She cared to go because Trump and Fox News told her that this is something she needed to be involved in. They got her killed. Someone pulled the trigger. That person's principally responsible, but she shouldn't have been in the path of the bullet. They put her there, and they won't own up to that either. Now, there's one other section on this I do want to talk about. In addition to the insane general rewriting of the 6th, Tucker Carlson, again, in an incredibly cowardly fashion, without actually showing you what happened on the day, wants to defend a couple of the individuals involved in that as well. So Here is his defense of zip tie guy.
Is that two defendants, Lisa Eisenhardt and her son, Eric Munchell, should face indefinite detention. Now, neither Lisa Eisenhardt nor her son damaged any property at the Capitol or committed any violence. They just walked in to what we used to refer to as the People's House. And yet somehow Joe Biden's Department of Justice convinced a trial judge that Lisa Eisenhardt was a quote, threat to our republic, and that her son was a quote, would-be martyr. Keep in mind, these are people whose crime was trespassing in the Capitol. We're not endorsing that, but some perspective, please.
No, you're 100% endorsing that. That is literally what you've been doing for months. These people tried to kill elected officials, and his job as one of the most watched people in news is to defend them and make you feel sorry for them. Now, remember, he did a full segment mocking AOC, fearing for her life. So there was a target and there was a person doing the targeting. He spends months attacking the target and defending those who were hunting them down. That is what he did. Now, he showed you the picture there of the guy. You might have forgotten exactly what he looked like. So we're gonna jump around a bit. I apologize, Brandon, but let's go to the actual zip tie guy and what he looked like on the day. Why aren't you showing his picture, Tucker? I mean, he was just there to express his thoughts. It's democracy in action. And he wore tactical gear because I don't know. He had zip ties because something something democracy. That's why he had restraint devices. That's why he wore a mask, because he was just invited into the Capitol. That's why he dressed as if he was one of the guys backing up Baron Zemo in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That's why he did all of that. Again, Tucker Carlson wanting to defend these people, but he can't bring himself to actually try to muster a defense of what they actually looked like on the day, who they actually were. He goes super vague. It's just a guy who's interested in democracy. Oh, what are his hobbies like? Well, let's go to this next photo. These are the guns he owns. For some reason, he needs all of those guns, including a sniper rifle. Probably because he's just such a fan of the philosophy of democracy. That's probably all it is. And look, did he kill anyone? No, thankfully. He certainly looked like he wanted to, or at least kidnap and restrain someone for some reason that no one will explain. I'll do a Tucker Carlson. Why did he have the restraint devices? They won't tell us. And Tucker won't either. He won't even try to explain it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as long as you're watching his show, you may understand, you know, if you maybe have been in high school already and you're like, oh, I remember back in 2005. Yeah, my high school visited the Capitol and they handed us restraint ties and masks before we walked in, because that's what we do when we go to the People's House. We go to the People's House and we put on masks and we have zip ties and we look for Congress people. That's what we do, right? That's what we do. We visit our People's House. Fun. We're invited in, and every field tripper is given all this to walk in and be like, "Oh, Nancy," because that's what we do. Man, it's so frustrating. As you point out, you only point out this mugshot with him and his mother rather than point out what he actually did, because guaranteed. But by the way, this progression of who the bad guys are, I'm not sure if Tucker was the one that was on this drumbeat, but I don't know if he was pushing back on it either. What happened to that they were Antifa and that they were BLM? We've abandoned that because that BS argument died somehow. I actually thought it would continue to catch on with them. But now we have to excuse what they did every month on the 6th. Excuse what they did. I thought they were BLM and Antifa. Why are we excusing their actions? BLM and Antifa must have gotten to Tucker Carlson somehow. Maybe they threatened him. I don't know what it is. They're a radical organization. But since they were the ones in the Capitol, why is he defending them? Yeah. Which one is it? It doesn't matter, because every day, as long as you have some new excuse to excuse the BS that they keep spewing at you, then mission accomplished. That's all he cares about.
I really wish that we could just, I don't wish that I was sitting down with a Tucker Carlson fan, but I wish during that I would and said, before the segment, so those people in the Capitol, they were all Antifa, right? Oh yeah, no, totally, no, totally. So then we watched the segment. So why is he defending them? I doubt they even think about it at that level. But you're totally right, JR. You're totally right. And by the way, one other person who's right, and I want to jump back to this tweet from Benjamin Dixon. Had these been Black Lives Matter protesters, Tucker would be calling for their public execution. Does anyone doubt it? Like, he conjures up hypothetical roving bands of BLM terrorists pulling your daughters out of your house. Like, that's specifically what he is saying. So he's very worried about specific bands of roving people in tactical gear. But again, when there's actual ones, he can't actually work himself up to get bothered by it. Georgia passed their voter suppression bill, and it is entirely possible that at some point court challenges might limit it or possibly overturn it. But that said, take a look at what our Supreme Court is like, so don't get too excited about that. In the meantime, different groups in Georgia are gonna do what they can to limit its corrosive impact. Voter advocacy groups and activist groups are gonna try to get people registered and all that with these new restrictions. And also in Atlanta, the mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, has issued an administrative order directing the city's chief equity officer to implement a series of actions to diminish what her office called new voting restrictions imposed by the bill. She says the voting restrictions of SB 202 will disproportionately impact Atlanta residents, particularly in communities of color and other minority groups. This administrative order is designed to do what those in the majority of the state legislature did not: expand access to our right to vote. So they're gonna do, she's gonna do what she can, the office is gonna do what they can. But bear in mind, the city of Atlanta does not have the authority over state election law, so the administrative order cannot change any of the new requirements. Most of the actions focus on voter education and staff training to better assist Atlanta residents with information on the new law changes or how to obtain necessary identification. So they are going to try to make the new onerous obstacles as unonerous and unobstacle-ish as they can, but they can't change the actual law. Because remember, it's not just that the law says you can't force these places to have X number of days of early voting. They actually limit it specifically. It's not like you have to give water to people waiting in line. You can't give water to people waiting in line. So they can't necessarily change those, JR, but she's gonna do what she can with her office to try to make it as little harm as possible, basically.
Well, look at these freedoms of our country, you know. You got freedom to run up in the Capitol, you got freedom to hoard 105 guns. You have the freedom to shoot people with those guns and then tell them that, you know, you get to. But you don't have the freedom to vote. And when new laws come in that restrict people from voting, and they openly talk about that's what they want to have people do, somehow we're still American, somehow we're still the freest country in the world. You can literally have an entire political party, a powerful political party, be behind restricting people's rights in one sentence, and the next sentence say that they're all about freedoms. It just shows you who they think deserves freedoms here and then who doesn't. So the hard part about here with the Atlanta mayor trying to with pushing this is just now it's up to the people to then come out and get that information. You know, because there's also going to be restrictions. These are multiple states, restrictions on groups actually giving this information or providing assistance to folks to be able to carry out these types of actions. So now people have to seek it out when they don't know what they're seeking. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the plan, you know. So I don't know, you know, maybe they can't put certain money towards certain things, initiatives to actually reach out to people and get to people. They have to kind of have it there and hope that the people kind of get to it. Now, I think part of the small good news of this is at least we're in this age of information where people can get to these things, but we just don't know how to trigger them to get to it. You know, you can't get in someone's morning routine and have them log on to, you know, the, I don't know where they're gonna put these resources and say just randomly a, you know, a state website or a city website, sure, where they talk about what you can do, when to sign up, these are new rules, make sure you do it by this, these are the restrictions, this is how you get around those restrictions. So you can actually have this weird freedom to vote in America. So that's the only good part about this, but I think it's exactly what they're looking for. Like, they have not much more recourse left except to just put information out there and hope that people get to it somehow.
Yeah. And hope that this is it. Because, like, obviously them passing this bill is terrible. They passed this bill, they could pass follow-up ones.
Yep.
They could do even more. They could spend 6 months watching to see how Democratic mayors and groups try to adapt to it and then pass new bills based on that. And they're gonna keep doing this until there's some sort of federal legislation that stops them from doing so, or the Supreme Court is fundamentally changed, or you take over these state legislatures, which is definitely, I mean, that's a monumental task in Georgia, but it needs to be done. And there are great groups that are trying to do that. Until one of those things happen, it's just going to be bill after bill after bill after bill across the country, making it harder and harder to vote.
Yeah, yeah, and we're gonna get there.
Yeah. Well, JR, we're going out on a bit of a down note, unfortunately, but thank you as always for joining us. It's great to have you back on Big News Wednesdays.
Sorry, I can't provide any happiness. Sprocket is nowhere nearby. Maybe I'll get the treats or something and then we'll tease him.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you. Talk to you soon.
See you guys, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.